Live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Wednesday to you, brought to you by Metro Rooter. You know what happened, Tony? Two things happened in that game as Chris Hudson was running down the sideline, okay? One,
Bill Cowher almost clocked him.
He cocked his fist.
Yeah.
And two, Bill Cowher's agent went out and bought another house in Ponte Vedra for him. I think it was his 17th at the time. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and the long overdue debut of Vito Stellino of the Florida Times Union here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Vito. How are you?
Just fine. Good to be here.
Well, glad you can make it by, and that's not that you haven't been able to make it by before. First time you've gotten the invite, and we appreciate you coming in to share a little expertise. You've been covering the Jags for how many years now?
Since 01.
01.
Yeah.
Okay.
I missed the good era.
Yeah, you had a little blip. Maybe it's your fault, Vito.
Yeah.
Well, you had a little blip on the radar with a couple of playoff appearances in that point in time. There is definitely a renewed sense of optimism around the football team, the fan base, and all that stuff. And as we were talking about before we came on the air today, really boils down, it's a pretty simple formula, right? If 5 plus 52, if the 5 is good, then the other 52 will probably be good as well. Talking about Blake Bortles, how much of this season is simply dependent on his development this year?
I think it's huge. It's a quarterback league. It's a passing league. You have to have a quarterback. This is his second year. He's looked a lot better in the preseason, but what you don't know is what happens when that game planning, when the games are real, is he still as good or does he kind of revert a little bit as far as mechanics and that when all of a sudden they're coming at him all the time?
That's always the question, right? Yeah. I always wonder about these guys that change it up, you know, to cite a guy that Jaguar fans don't like to bring up, but you look at pictures of Tim Tebow here in the preseason, he's still holding that ball parallel to the ground instead of cocked upright. You know, after all that work, it's easy when the quote-unquote real bullets are flying, to use that cliche, to slip back to your muscle memory habits. But it's so far so good, it looks like, with Blake.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously the going to Tom House has made a difference. His mechanics look much better. But again, it's preseason. But hey, Blake Gabbert used to look good in preseason.
That's a good point there. Vito the realist, though, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to get on, this is your golden opportunity, Jaguar fandom, to speak with Vito Stellino. Of course, you can follow him on Twitter, at Vito Stellino. I know a lot of you do out there. How would you characterize your relationship with the Jaguar fan base?
It's probably improved in recent years because maybe 02, 03, when I'd say, well, you know, there's some big problems, they didn't want to believe that. But after what's happened, after 7 wins in 3 years,
they finally come around your way of thinking, right?
Yeah, yeah. You don't get too much flack about, how can you be negative when...
Did you get a lot of the reaction, though? Was it... because I know, from my vantage point, watching you and Maurice Jones-Drew engage each other, he every year he'd say, Vito, this is the year you get on board. You're going to be positive this year. Why can't you be on the team? That's not your job to be on the team. You come. Tony and I grow up in a different era, and we're just sports radio guys. We're guys who flap our gums. I don't consider myself a hard-bitten journalist.
No.
You got in the business in 1963. That whole mindset of you need to support the home team, is that foreign to you? Is that something you're like, wait a minute, I've got to just lay it out as I see it, good or bad?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, your role isn't to support the home team. It's to give the fans an accurate description of what's going on.
How's your relationship with Gus Bradley? You feel like you get along pretty well?
Oh, great.
He's a very hard not to, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, who doesn't like Gus Bradley?
Yeah, I want to say, what's wrong with you if you had an issue with Gus?
He makes our job so much easier. You know, especially compared to the guy we had before.
Well, yeah, Mike Mularkey, we're all glad that era didn't last very long.
And the guy before that.
Yeah, well, it's all a matter of degree, but we're
always
happy.
I like Jack.
I did, too. I like Jack as a guy, but,
I'm not saying he was the easiest to get along with at times, you know, here in Jacksonville, but I always liked him. Like, we've talked about this before, Mike. He's the type of guy that I would like to meet in a bar somewhere, you know, and just hang out with for a couple hours. Now, after games where they lose, you know, he's not a lot of fun, but there aren't a whole lot of guys around the league that are a whole lot of fun. I'm okay with the coach not being happy-go-lucky after a loss.
Maybe Vito was talking about Mel Tucker, the Mel Tucker regime.
He might have been.
I don't know.
Hey, Mel was a nice guy.
He was a nice guy.
What can you say?
Well, we hope we had the right guy here. And, you know, we're going to talk a lot about your expectations for the team this year, what you've seen, whether they made the right moves in the offseason in your estimation. But another thing that we broached before we came on the air today, look, I think that Shad Khan has shown the patience and the vision to stick with this plan. He's bought into what Dave Caldwell sold to him about how they should build this franchise. And therefore, I think Gus Bradley, despite the fact that he, I believe, the only coach in the Super Bowl era to win only 7 games in the first 2 years and get a third year with the same franchise, I don't feel like he's on shaky ground, but there's got to be a minimum, right, for Gus? So how many games does he have to win so we don't hear all the chirping?
Yeah, I think at least 4. You got to win more than at least one more than last
year. You
would
hope, right?
Yeah. I mean, you hope they're going to win 6 or 7, but I think below, if they go 3-13 again, boy, that's tough.
Right. At a certain point, I mean, because obviously you go 0-16, you're not going to keep your job.
Yeah,
so there's got to be a number, there's got to be a point there. But
yeah.
And I think part of it is not only the record, but how they look in the games. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, in the NFL, you're judged on your record, and it's not college football. It's not a voting system, but that's got to factor into it as well, don't you think, a little bit?
Definitely. And I think in Gus's point, I'm also big on who you're going to fire the coach. Well, who are you going to replace him with?
Right.
At any given time, there are maybe 4 or 5 really good coaches in the leagues. Right now, there may be not that many. You don't see too many Knowles and Landrys and Lombardis, Phil Walters out there right now. But when you fire the coach, new guy comes in, he wants his players. So then you almost take a step backwards because there's going to be a lot of change.
New offense, new defense, and these guys fit the scheme, what you want to do, all these things, right?
So I'm a big believer in continuity. The players seem to have bought into him. I mean, anybody who talks about the Jaguars say, hey, they fly around the ball. A lot of effort, all that kind of stuff, you know. So if they're just not good enough, well, then is that Gus's fault? Maybe it wasn't given a good enough player.
Right. He certainly hasn't lost anybody, it seems like, in his period here. And you're right, they have bought in despite the fact. I mean, these guys want to win. As much as, look, we understand, it's a great lifestyle. You make a lot of money, whether you win or lose. But ultimately, these guys have been competitors their whole lives. And I think most professional athletes do care about winning and losing, and the fact that he hasn't lost the team under these circumstances speaks well for him. We got phone lines already loading up to talk to you, but before we take our first break, and we'll come back with calls at 641-1010. Just going back to the draft, did you think that they allocated that first pick? You can't know what's going to happen with Dante Fowler Jr. That's just, you know, crow's luck right there. But did you think that was the right move to make? Would you have been a Leonard Williams guy or an Amari Cooper guy or somebody else if you were pulling the trigger for the Jags?
I wouldn't have been a Cooper guy because you can find receivers all over the draft. The Leonard Williams, that's a tough pick, you know, of course, because Fowler's hurt and he's not.
So sure.
Then you say, well, hey, maybe they made the wrong pick. That was the tough decision, but they were going for the pass rusher. They were looking for the Leo guy. He was the best in that role. So it's kind of hard to knock the pick because how can you know he's going to get hurt the first day? You know?
Right. And is that the biggest need facing this team right now as you see it coming out of the preseason pass rush?
I think definitely,
yeah.
Because, you know, Clemens had 8 sacks. Marks had 8.5. That's 16.5. Marks, you know, who knows when he's going to be ready and what he'll be. That's often a 2-year injury, or at least a year and a half. It's only been 8 months in
sure.
the last game of last year. So where's the rush going to come from? I mean, that's the big question. And they're talking about Clemens not starting, so he's fresher on passing downs. But now the Branch is hurt. Are they going to play him more?
Right, is he going to play more? Is they going to wear him down?
Yeah.
Right.
So I think he'll blitz more, that kind of thing. Yeah, no, I mean, to me, you got to get to the quarterback, especially this year. We got some quarterbacks you can beat, you know, the Brian Hoyers of the world, Tyrod Taylor, Fitzpatrick, those kind of guys.
Yeah, you think there's 6 games because of the quality of quarterbacks that are just going to be very difficult for them. They've got the 2 with Luck, Brady, Breeze, Flacco, Rivers.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, those are tough teams for anybody to play, but for a developing team as well. But there's 10 very gettable games. Not to say you can't steal one or two of those.
Sure, yeah.
But
and that goes back to Blake, right? I mean, that goes back to how we started the conversation and how good he is this year. You're hoping that you draft a guy when you draft a number three overall that gives you the opportunity when you go into games against Brady and Breeze and Rivers and those types of quarterbacks. So you're like, yeah, we can beat those guys with our guy, and hopefully Blake develops into that at some point this year.
Yeah, it may be a little bit too early this year, but certainly those other 10 guys, he should be able to compete with all those guys. Yeah.
You haven't heard? He's going to throw for 56 touchdowns this year, break the new league record. Vito Stellino is here with us from the Florida Times Union. We're going to take a quick timeout. We'll go right to your calls. If you want to get on with Vito, take advantage. He's going to be with us for most of the next hour. 641-1010 is the phone-in line that also doubles as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. You can text us questions for Vito as well, who's been on the Jaguar beat now for 14 years and covering the National Football League as a whole. Let me do my math. 52 years now, Vito?
No, 51st.
Your 51st year. How about that? Good for you, man. I haven't done anything for 51 years, Tony. That includes breathe. But I can only hope to follow in Vito's footsteps on a number of those measures. Metro Rooter is our Wednesday sponsor. We're glad you're on board. Johnny O, the senior writer for Jaguars.com, will join us later on in the program. Give us his take on game week number one for the Jacksonville Jaguars taking on Carolina this Sunday, of course, right here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. With a 1 o'clock kick. But the phone lines are open to you next if you'd like to get in. By the way, the question of the day, I always feel like you got to exclude Blake from these, so we did. And if you can go to the Jaguars Today Facebook page, or you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, we ask you who will be the offensive MVP other than Blake Bortles this year, just so we don't get one continuous stream of Bortles. We'll probably still get a few of those votes, Vito, despite the fact that we said other than Blake Bortles. And, of course, you can tweet Vito anytime, at Vito Stellino. You should be following him anyway if you want the latest on what's going on with your Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll come back, take your phone calls straight ahead. It's Jaguars Today. We're live at Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Vito Stellino here with us on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Fly me to the moon.
Oh, let me good.
You like that?
I love that.
All right. Tyler aims to please, Vito.
Great.
Let me tell you, if you can't enjoy Sinatra, there's something wrong with you.
I agree.
Not Sinatra.
I agree, but we asked Vito what kind of music he went. Swing, he said Sinatra. He said he also liked the Beatles, so... Now we're getting to know Vito a little bit better today, and we wanted to make him feel at home there. Because he does it his way, Tony. He is Vito Stellino of the Florida Times Union. We got phone calls ready to talk to you, Vito. We're excited to talk about the 2015 Jaguars season with you. Final thought before we get to these calls. Mentioned the top pick in the draft and the direction they went. But just overall, were you impressed by the free agent haul they were able to land? Did you feel like they maybe missed out on some guys you would have targeted? How did you look at their other player procurement this offseason?
No, I thought they did well. Actually, I thought they should have done this the first year. You know, the thinking at the time was, well, you signed too many guys, and then when you're good in 3 years, then...
Got to let them go, right? Yeah, or they're no longer in their prime.
But they'd only be in their seventh year now. I think they should have signed more...
Guys going into the second contract?
Yeah. You know, 5-year guys, just, you know, that type of thing. But no, I think they certainly upgraded the, you know, Odrick looks, you know, like a really, very good signing, you know, and I think some of the other guys.
Julius Thomas looked phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I think will look very good, we hope, when he gets back.
Yeah, you know, and House looks like he can, you know, make a difference. And so, I think they did. I think it did well. You know, you can argue, well, should they have plunged for DeMarco Murray? You know?
Right.
But if Yeldon turns out to be good, then you say, well, you know, is it worth the money paying a guy who's maybe had too many carries?
Sure.
Know, that's one of those kind of debates you can have.
It's always going to be one of those kind of debates, you know.
Although it would have been... You know, when you're trying to energize a fan base, getting DeMarco Murray, I think would have been,
Murray and Julius Thomas, both, you know, coming in with Pro Bowl resumes would have been very exciting. I think Julius got him excited as it was. And I think Parnell may turn out to be the key of the whole thing.
Yeah, another very good signing,
Offensive line, do you think encouraged by what you've seen? I think we all have been encouraged, but is it... you know, how good do you think they could be as a unit?
Well, you know, you got to look a year ago. You were starting two rookies, a second-year guy who had an effective rookie because he hurt his rookie year, and Austin Pastore, who's not even on the team now. So I think, you know, with Parnell and Wiz, they've really upgraded that. And the second year of Beatles being here, he should be improved. Lindler's solid, and we'll just wait and see on Joko. So I think the line could be, you know, upgraded quite a bit. You know, it they certainly gave Blake time in the preseason again,
and he helps create his own time.
Sure,
as well.
Yeah. But now the run blocking, you know, I don't know, was that is that a problem?
Right. Was that Detroit's a very good run team, because there were certainly no holes for T.J. Yeldon to find,
yeah.
And the ones that were there, he might have missed as well. So yeah. We'll talk more about him as we go along. Let's get to some of these callers here at 641-1010. Again, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line is on the same number, 641-1010. If you want to send a question for Vito Stellino of the Florida Times Union, long time Jaguar beat writer and a longtime coverer of the National Football League. Let's start with John this morning. John, you're on Jaguars Today with Vito Stellino. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Mike. Hey, Vito. How you doing?
How you doing?
Hey. First off, Mike, I just want to say great idea. I'm glad you finally had Vito on. I love having Jeff Lagerman on, but I kind of feel like sometimes he homers up too much, and I love having Vito's objective opinion online. I just got a quick comment. Vito, just want to say I appreciate your reporting over the years. I really enjoy your interview questions. I feel like you're the only one to ask the questions everybody else is kind of afraid to ask. And just wanted to say keep up the good work. We support you, and I hope I'm speaking for all Jaguar fans when we say we really enjoyed your reporting over the years.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, John. That's got to make you feel good out of the box. I didn't set that one up for you, Vito.
He said it just the way I told him to.
Very nice. Look, I've been in some press conferences. I know you get up there. You've got your line of questioning that you want to ask. You're writing a story, or you want to get to the bottom of it, because I've seen it. Look, let's be honest, right? We all know. People go, oh, come on, Vito, another. He's asking like the fifth question, because you're looking, you're trying to get – from my vantage point, you're trying to get them to answer not necessarily the way you want them to, but the aspect of what you're asking that maybe they're not giving you a direct enough answer, and you're trying to maybe hold their feet to the fire a little bit, and you can be tenacious at times, and that's a good quality for a reporter.
Well, often, you know, they say, well, you're asking the same question. Well, I didn't get a very good answer the first time.
I want an answer is why I keep asking
so,
those questions.
So, you know, you keep trying, and you know, you see what happens, because sometimes the second or third time you ask it, you get a much better answer.
All right. Well, the first one was really good at your column. Let's see what the second call brings. Let's go to Stuart up next this morning. Stuart, you're on Jaguars Today with Vito Stellino. Go ahead.
Hey there, Vito. I didn't know if you knew this or not, but I was watching a Football Life episode the other day, and you, as a young reporter, that's back when you were still spring, still a sex appeal, were on an episode of that showing reporting whoever that life was about. Did you know that?
Yeah, I've actually been in a couple of those, sometimes in press conference situations, sometimes, you know, being interviewed. That's, yeah, I had a little bit more hair back in those days.
You have any questions for Vito, Stewart? I guess that was it.
Hey, that guy lives in my city right there. I know him. That's
all right.
Congratulations on being Springfield and Sexfield back then, by the way.
Thank you, Stuart. By the way, I should mention you're in the writer's wing of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. How did that come about? Tell us how that, you know, like, were you nominated? What does the process entail that got you into there?
They nominate a writer each year. And I just happened to get nominated that year. And then the writers vote. So it's kind of your peers voting. And the year I was nominated, they also nominated Will McDonough. You remember him?
Wow, sure.
He was on TV all the time. So I didn't expect to win myself that year. I figured, well, I'd have to wait another year. And I was shocked I actually won it. And then Will got it the next year. I mean, he was obviously
a hey, he probably deserves it, too. We'll let him in, too. Yeah. I mean, who am I to say? I'm not in. You let him in. But do you consider that kind of not the pinnacle, because you're still doing great things, but is that maybe the proudest single moment of your career?
Yeah, probably, because it's, being recognized by your peers.
Sure.
And it's part of the Hall of Fame, that type of thing. So, yeah.
Pretty big deal,
I'd
say.
It was a fun thing.
All right, 641-1010, back to the lines we go. Art, you're up next on Jaguars Today. You're on with Vito Stellino. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, listen, I've been trying to get this question answered for about a year.
it drives me crazy. You got a 53-man active roster. They're all under contract. They all get paid every week. And you only dress out 45 of them on game day. Why can't you dress out the whole group?
Well, the thinking is they want each team to have the same number of healthy players dressing for the game. If you let all 53 dress, one of them might have seven guys hurt, and the other one only might have one.
They want to make it as level a playing field as possible and still give you enough guys to compete with, right?
That's the idea. And they also, they used to have like a four-week injured reserve list, and then they said, well, that wasn't good. So
What were the issues with that?
As usual, it's like our team's
fudging, right, toe sprain.
Is the guy really hurt?
That type of thing. Right.
So they kind of figured, okay, with just dressing 46, you can keep a guy 2-3 weeks just inactive, accomplish the same thing without having to go through, well, is that guy hurt? Should he really be on the 4-week thing? That, you know, are you doing it with a healthy person? All those kind of questions. And so they eliminated all that. And but then that's led to all these questions. Why don't you let everybody dress? Well, I mean, like for example, the Jaguars this week, they'll probably have four or five guys
that couldn't play.
They couldn't
play. Even if you let
I mean, Carolina's got some injury guys too, so it might kind of even out. But you don't want to have the other team having 50 guys and you've only got 47.
Right.
You know, so that's the that's the thinking of it. And I think it's kind of a pretty good way to handle it because it just and then they have the one, you can bring one guy back from injured reserve, you know, and that was another thing about the rest of the guys, you put them on IR, it's it for the year.
Right.
Yeah, that's the, I mean, the joke used to be, you know, yes, a guy where he's hurt, and he'd say, well, it was his left knee, and then the team says, oh, it's his right knee.
It didn't really matter. They're stashing guys.
Basically,
develop them and not have to, you know, keep them, go over the roster limit, basically.
Yeah, so that was the idea. And, of course, then they added the practice squad, too, to give you more people to practice. So
right.
So I think it's actually a pretty good system, even though people are always complaining, why are you paying these guys they're not playing? You know?
And that's your answer, why they activate 45 on game day.
I wonder if they'll expand it at some point. But there hadn't been a whole lot of games where you feel like a team is so undermanned because of injuries that they're having to run out tight ends to play tackle and that kind of, like, it doesn't happen often enough, I think, that the NFL sees a big problem with only having the 45-46.
There was a stat a few years ago, this is when the Jags still had three quarterbacks, when you had Leftwich, Garrard, and Quinn Gray at the time, and I remember reading a stat that, let's say the time frame was about 20 years. In about a 20-year period, only two teams were forced to go to their third quarterback on game day due to injuries to both of their first two guys. Now, they may have opted to go to the third one due to ineffectiveness, but actually being forced to go. So more and more now you see teams only keeping the two quarterbacks like the Jags have done for a number of years.
The idea is if you're down your third quarterback, you're probably
done anyway, right?
One of the times that happened was the Steelers in the game in Houston in the 70s, and Stout and Bradshaw both hurt, and so they put in Tony Dungy, who was a college quarterback.
Sure.
He throws a touchdown pass. He had intercepted a pass earlier. So I still think he's the last guy to throw a touchdown pass and intercept a pass in the same game.
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, you got to go back to the two-way guys, and even a lot of those guys probably not playing quarterback and playing defense.
Right.
I mean, Sammy Ball might have done it because he was a defensive back, you know, back in the day. But certainly in the modern times, it's pretty rare.
Well, that kind of dovetails with our text. I'm going to give you time to think about this as we go into break. Texter says, since you've covered the league for as long as you have, he'd like Vito's best he's ever seen list. Okay, he wants to know who you think the best player you've ever covered, best quarterback, coach, team. We'll go through some of those. You may know those right off the top of your head, but we'll give you time to think about those during the break. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, along with Vito Stellino of the Florida Times Union. Phone lines remain open to you at 641-1010, also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. And you can tweet us questions as well. You know the handles there, at Vito Stellino, at MD_1010XL, and at 1010XL Fat Tony, and we'll pass those along on the air. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Vito Stellino live at Everbank on Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
You say you want a revolution.
It's the Vito Stellino Revolution on Jaguars Today. We are changing the program fundamentally forever from this moment forward. Vito Stellino, our guest this morning. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. For any size plumbing job in your home, business, industrial plumbing, septic systems, you name it, Metro Rooter has a solution. Same day service, weekends included, the right people with the right equipment. That's the combination Metro Rooter has used to be so successful since 1978, serving Jacksonville and beyond. Visit MetroRooter.com or give them a call at 695-1911, 695-1911, Metro Rooter, the people I trust in my own home when I've got plumbing issues, and trust me, you don't want to have them, but Metro Rooter has a solution for you, our Wednesday sponsor here on Jaguars Today. All right, Vito, let's get into some of these questions we've got here for you, both past and present, about your coverage of the National Football League for over half a century. And let's start with this on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. As we went into break, we told you, since he's covered it so long, how about Vito's best he's ever seen list? Who's the best player in your lifetime of covering the National Football League?
I'd say Joe Green. He
really?
Not only he was an unbelievable defensive lineman, but he was a team leader. He set the tone for that team that won four Super Bowls. And he was so quick that back in the days when they had film, they lined him up against Jim Otto, who was a Hall of Fame center, at a they called it the stunt 4-3. He was an angle. And so they ran the film frame by frame. In one frame, he was in front of Otto. The next frame, he was past Otto. There was no frame of him going past him.
he went through him.
He was faster than the cameras in those days could, could record.
Sure.
Today with digital, you probably could do it. But, and he was just an amazing team leader. I mean, he just set the tone.
Did a hell of a Coke commercial as well.
Yeah.
Very
that,
iconic.
That kind of changed the image. They called him Mean Joe Green.
Of course, yeah.
You know, I mean, he got caught once. Paul Howard in a playoff game was holding him. And he punched him right in the solar plexus.
the solar plexus.
And the play clears, and this guy's on the ground, and nobody. Well, what happened? You know. Well, in the Denver, they got the punch on this big screen, and the fans went crazy. And of course, he got fined, you know, that type of thing. But it was like, hey, you know, I'm supposed to hold.
He was a tone setter.
Yeah.
Who's the best quarterback that you've covered in that time? Either directly or just around the league.
This answer would probably surprise you. I think Terry Bradshaw is incredibly underrated. That he could make throws that Joe Montana couldn't make.
Oh, I agree with that. He had one of the strongest arms in the history of the league.
Yeah, and he played four Super Bowls, made touchdown passes in all four of them in the fourth quarter.
He won two MVPs, right?
Yeah,
Super Bowl
two
MVPs.
Yeah. And he, in Super Bowl 14 against the Rams, they're down 19-17, third, mud 8. And they send in this 70 slot hook and go. Swan's hurt. They're double covering Stallworth. He puts the ball right in Stallworth's over the shoulder. Rod Perry takes a swipe and misses him. And for 50 yards, Stallworth's running for a touchdown, the only guy on that side of the field, you know, for game winning. It wasn't a drive. It was like a one play, you know, thing. And he had such an unbelievable arm that he could make throws like that. Even Brady, who's certainly right up there, most of his passes, like 10-yard passes.
Yeah.
You know,
a lot of quick stuff.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. He doesn't throw deep the way, you know, Bradshaw did. So.
You know who's having a moment right now, Tony? Frank Frangie's having a moment. I mean, Joe Green and Bradshaw back to back, getting some love. Who's the best coach in that era, in your 50-plus?
Well, the guys that I covered, it'd be Gibson, Knoll would be kind of 1-1A, hard to choose between them. Knoll had more talent, but, a great coach. Gibbs won three Super Bowls with three different
QBs, one of whose birthday is today, Joe Theismann.
None of them are in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know, so, Noel's thing was, it's not my job to motivate you. You know, I get players who are self-motivated. If you're not self-motivated, well, we'll find people.
They must have found a lot of self-motivated players because yeah. That's a pretty good string of success.
Well, you get 9 Hall of Famers. And Gibbs was, he had one message for the week. The same message to the players, the writers, the secretaries. It was whatever his message was. That was the message. He sold that message. He was very good at that, you know.
Who's the best team you've seen? A single season best team, whether it was a team you covered or just watched from afar?
Probably for one season, the 85 Bears, but they only won one championship.
Sure.
And so it would have been great had the Steelers in the 70s played the 85 Bears. That would have been an unbelievable thing.
Nobody would have scored.
Well, Steelers had a pretty good offense.
Yeah, they did. They did.
They had 4 Hall of Famers on offense.
Compared to Jim McMahon and Willie Gault.
Yeah, so Steelers might have won it with the offense. But for sustained excellence, 9 Hall of Famers, Steelers, there'll never be a team like that again. Because you couldn't keep both Stallworth and Swan. You'd have to let one of them go.
Right.
You know, Lambert and Ham, could you keep both of them at linebacker? That type of thing, you know, with the salary.
Somebody'd get overpaid in free agency. And then they fizzle and they see it was all Chuck Knoll's doing, that these guys were so good. The guy who has that reputation now, of course, is Bill Belichick, right? You go to New England and they assimilate you in and they wash away your past sins and you become a new man. What do you make of now the entirety of this New England Patriot era on the heels of, I don't know how much new reporting is in there, but seeing everything laid bare once again with the whole Spygate thing all the way up through the present day? What do you make of this last 15 years of Patriot dominance?
Well, I think the odds are pretty good. They probably did not deflate the balls. There's certainly no evidence that they did. I mean, Goodell just totally mishandled that. He should have said last January, we've never tested balls at halftime. We know tires deflate in cold weather, so maybe it's the weather.
Maybe you didn't know that.
You know, well, maybe not. But we, you know, so going forward, we're going to, and the game was 45-7, so a possible difference they make. Brady was better in the second half after they reinflated than it was in the first half. So going forward, we're going to put in a new policy, and that's the end there. Everybody would have forgotten about it. Oh, sorry.
That's all right. Vito's, he's used to pens, though. He's not used to this big mic stand in front of him.
Spygate, I mean, that was real cheating. I mean, that's, you know, it probably, did they win, would they win those three without it? I doubt it. They won 3 Super Bowls by 3 points.
By the skin of their teeth, right.
You know, when they were doing blatant cheating. And the weird thing is, we all think now that Goodell landed on them for Deflategate because he was too easy on them for Spygate. And he destroyed all the evidence. I mean, that was just ridiculous.
You agree with that narrative? Because that seems to be the common perception, even, I think, before yesterday's Outside the Lines report. But really, that cemented it, that there were owners around the league that said, wow, how did you let these guys off so easy? They destroyed what was described as a room full of evidence and never to see the light of day. I mean, do you think it's as simple as that, that the feeling in the league was, hey, if these guys cross the line again, you better drop the hammer on them?
That was part of it, and also he'd gotten all the flack over Ray Rice, so he wanted to show, hey, I'm going to be
tough. How tough he is, yeah.
But I think, see, also Belichick was supposed to apologize publicly. That was part of the deal, and he just didn't do it. He just defied him.
Right.
Now, Roselle would have had him in his office, you know. I mean, Roselle would not put up with that.
Roselle the best, I mean, you know, different guys, and Roselle, you know, ushered in the era of the TV deal and the merger and all that and the Tagliabue. Really helped financially take it to a new level. And now, I mean, financially, they're doing better than ever. But Pete Rozelle, where does he, among sports commissioners, I mean, what kind of place in the pantheon does he hold?
He was the best. I mean, he had common sense, which is really lacking. And he did not have an arrogance, which now seems to be, you know, Goodell seems to stress arrogance. he would tell his staffers, hey, we work for the teams, you know. He'd been a general manager of a team, you know. He knew what it was like to be involved with a team. And he just had great common sense, great leadership ability. Yeah, I mean, there's just, it's not even close. I mean, he was
the guy.
Yeah, he was the guy. I mean, he set everything in motion. He did Monday Night Football, which you have to remember, the networks were not too keen on Monday Night Football. You know, they had done a Saturday night Green Bay Baltimore game, Johnny Unitas against Star Lombardi Unitas, and the Miss America contest of all things killed in the ratings.
Really?
Yeah, so they were not. CBS and NBC said flat out no. And the only reason that ABC agreed to it was he was threatening to syndicate it. And then ABC was, they would grab it, his stations, their stations would go with the syndication.
Go with that, yeah, instead.
Yeah. So, I mean, he just had so much vision, you know. And, but also he was like, he tried Thursday night games and just decided, and then he stopped it. It was like too much. Now, it's all about too much.
Of course, you know, I mean, every day, not only every day, but every month, every week. I mean, the whole year is, you know, you asked us when you came in, how's the show been going for you? We said, great, ask us on June 7th. Maybe we'll say it's a little slow. But even then, Tony, it's like maybe
it's
a month
something.
Where we've got to come up with some, you know, off-season topics. There's always something going on in the league now. Does that make your job tougher or easier?
Well, it's easier as far as writing, but it's not good for the league because you always want to have people wanting more instead of like, oh, my gosh, another
we
game.
We've got more than we can consume now.
Yeah, yeah, and then the colleges add in, too. You know, people forget the colleges. Notre Dame was on twice a year, once on national, once on regional. You know, there were all kinds of rules about, you know, overexposure. And now, of course, everything's on, you know. But he kind of realized you don't want to overexpose the game. I mean, this Thursday night opener, it doesn't get as good ratings as the Sunday night games during the season in prime time.
Hmm.
You know, because it's just people just aren't used to Thursday
right.
nights, you know, when it's, you know, early in the year and that type of thing.
And plus, the Thursday night games, for whatever reason last year, just seemed to stink.
Well, yeah, they weren't very good. And,
right?
And,
I mean, even if the matchups were good, the games didn't turn out to be so hot.
Yeah, yeah. But also, it's like, you know, Saturday and Sunday, that's like kind of enough, you know, and then, okay, now we'll look forward to next week, you know. But now it's like, they overexposure. That's what they have now. And eventually that can come back to bite you, you know.
Let's get another call in here with Vito Stellino. 641-1010 is the phone number. Bud, you're up next this morning on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Hello, Vito. Hi, Bud. It's Bud. Listen,
how you doing?
Fine, sir. Everybody's kind of got the Jaguars going somewhere between 7 and 9 wins. And my curiosity is, if we don't make that mark, and there are some possibilities of coaching changes, what have you, I'm looking for an easy exchange in coaches. Is there any possibility that the Buffalo line coach could possibly come head coach and keep all the staff and keep everything intact for at least another year before they make a major decision? And I'll take that off the air. Thank you.
All right, bud.
Well, we've talked about this earlier. I'm against coaching changes to begin with, especially when you got a guy like Gus. And certainly, if they win 7 games, there's no way they're going to, you know, make a change. That if you only win 3, well, then we'll have to wait and see.
That's up for debate,
you know,
then.
Maybe. We don't really know Shad that well. I mean, he's this iconic figure, but when you look at it, he only gives a couple of interviews a year. You know, here in Jacksonville, anyway, he'll talk at the Super Bowl and the league meetings. But so we don't really have a feel for what his thought process is.
Yeah, behind closed doors, exactly.
Yeah, he doesn't, you know, we just haven't been able to get a good read on him, you know. So what he thinks, who knows, you know.
Is it possible, though, that Marone has the biggest impact of any of the newcomers on this football team? I mean, you would think Greg Olsen being the offensive coordinator, but Doug Marone's going to have a significant impact on this team if the preseason is any indication based on not only the new guys that they've added to the line, but I think, you know, Zane Beatles, I think they feel a little bit better about than they did certainly at the beginning of last year. And just overall, the line looked pretty good, you know, protection-wise, which was the big thing last year. How big of an impact do you think Marone has on this team?
Oh, I think he definitely has a big impact. But I can't see them making him the head coach a year after he quit in Buffalo. I mean, that's not a good... Whatever happened there, who knows, but it's not good on your resume. The year later, you announce, okay, we're going to get rid of Gus and hire Doug Marone.
Right, right.
I'd be shocked if that happened.
Yeah, that would be an incredibly unpopular decision. Now, that, again, based on how the season plays out, but I don't think we're going to be talking about these kind of topics. At least I hope that's not going to be the case. And hopefully they get off to a nice quick start for a change here, and we can bury some of that talk early in the season. All right, coming back.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Let's go way back to 1960. That's even pre-Vito Stellino era, Tony, right there. 1960, Denver beats Boston 13-10 in the American Football League's first game ever before 21,597 fans in Boston. Famous birthdays on this date, or famous people born on this date, include Dick LeBeau, Hall of Famer. Vito, you remember Dick LeBeau from his playing days, I would assume, right?
Oh, Detroit, yeah.
Longtime player, 62 career interceptions. Get close to that mic.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. 62 career interceptions. Hall of Famer, we know him from his innovative defensive coaching philosophies. How good of a standout player? Obviously a Hall of Famer, but how good of a player? What kind of renown did he have around the league?
Well, he was part of a very good secondary with the Lions. You know, they won a couple titles back then. You know, Yale Larry was on that team. In fact, there were four guys. They began with L.
Was Lem Barney one of them?
No, Lem Barney was later on.
He was later, okay.
Yeah. And, yeah, no, he was just an excellent guy, you know. But in those days, you know, defensive backs didn't get a lot of notice.
Right. So, 62 picks, pretty good numbers.
Oh, yeah,
when it wasn't as wide open and free-flowing with the offense. And also born on this date, guy we mentioned earlier, Joe Theismann, one of those three quarterbacks that Joe Gibbs helped use to steer him to a Super Bowl victory. Joe, born on this date in 1949, turned 66 years old today. This state football history brought to you this week by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. Whether it's your home, your place of business, repairs, re-roofs, the only call you need to make is 287-7756. Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, license number CCC056797. That is this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Part of a couple Lions championship teams. That's going back to LeBeau.
Right?
Hey, that was my team. I grew up in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
That's your squad. Who were you in the backyard? Who do you pretend to be in the backyard?
Oh, Bobby Lane was the guy.
Of course. He's Bobby Lane, Tony.
Yeah.
I was Kellen Winslow, senior.
Apparently, all of the talk about Jason Pierre-Paul being potentially able to play as early as Sunday was coming from a predictable source, the people around JPP. Pierre-Paul and the Giants parted ways yesterday without any contract signed, no clear timetable on when it will be. The Giants still have not revoked that franchise tender, because if they did, then he would become a free agent. The expectation is for the two sides to try and determine how much Pierre-Paul will make on a prorated version of that franchise deal. But there is some word that JPP wouldn't be happy with anything less than the full year guaranteed as he heads back to South Florida. So the saga continues between the Giants and Jason Pierre-Paul. And the Patriots are back in the news today.
No,
it's not
surprise.
That again. Schefter reporting that the Pats and left tackle Nate Solder have agreed to a two-year contract extension worth just over $20 million. It will keep Solder in New England through 2017. Also, as part of that deal, reportedly, the Patriots would be unable to place a franchise or transition tag on Solder when he hits free agency in 2017.
All right, a couple of things on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Yes, we did see it, but it bears mentioning Derek Trucks was wearing a Jaguar shirt on Stephen Colbert's first show last night as he was jamming with the band.
Yeah, it was cool.
Got this in. Have to say, respect the heck out of Vito. But, you hear the big but coming, but disagree with the overexposure thing a little. I love how many nights the games are on, and most people I know wish we had one every day. If we had one every night, we'd want two on every night because we always want more. And then this one, hello Vito, what are your keys to victory for the Jaguars against the Panthers this Sunday? Let's discuss. What are the Jags' two or three top things they need to accomplish this week?
They got to get the running game going. You know, so far in the preseason, it wasn't very effective.
Do you agree with the decision? Obviously, they drafted Yeldon to be the starter, but he has very little game reps, and Denard has looked good. Do you agree with the decision to put T.J. Yeldon at the top of the depth chart?
I'm okay with it, but I think he's on a short leash. I mean, if he goes out there and six carries for 10 yards like
right,
he did.
Right, and Denard comes in and plays well, then you're going to see a lot more of him.
I think it depends on how the game goes, who plays how many things. But I think they're starting Yeldon because he's their guy of the future and that type of thing. But they need a good running game so the Panthers can't put too much heat on Bortles. So I think that's a major thing. And they got to find a way to put some heat on Cam Newton. You just can't let him run around. And
right. Is it more important to pressure him and to try to pressure him into mistakes, or sometimes with a mobile quarterback like that, you put pressure on him, they escape. The idea is maybe to contain those guys and keep them in the pocket. Is he less dangerous if they just simply do that, contain him, keep him in the pocket? Because outside of Greg Olsen, those weapons aren't scaring anybody right now.
I think you have to contain him. You know, make him beat you from the pocket, because that's not his forte.
Do you spy him? You put Telvin Smith on him and chase him around a little bit?
That might not be a bad idea.
I mean, he is the offense, right?
Yeah, because they have no receivers. You know?
Right.
And James Stewart is kind of a long
Jonathan, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
I did the same thing this week already.
James Stewart
for Jonathan Stewart thing.
Little man.
So. And look, I think defensively, I think it is about keeping Cam Newton in the pocket, but for a team that has the offensive weapons that they do in the passing game right now, it's about not letting that running game get off the ground. For Carolina, if they can't run the ball this week, I don't think they have any chance of scoring points, because I don't see anything in that passing game that really scares you. I mean, Greg Olsen is a good tight end, and you figure there's going to be a lot of numbers coming his way this week because there's not much else there. But if they can't run the ball effectively, I don't think Carolina can do anything on offense.
Will Brinson at CBS did his game predictions column today. Jaguars, 18. Panthers, 17.
That'd be sweet.
Ooh,
I don't care how they
get it. Baby. Vito, let's start with this week. First off, do you think they'll get the victory? Who are you picking to win this Sunday, if you've made that decision yet?
Again, it's all about Bortles. If he plays well, I think they'll win. If he's shaky, so it's just very hard to tell, because we don't really know who are the Jaguars. We haven't had a chance to find out.
What is the most important thing for Blake? Avoiding turnovers, making big plays? What is it? Is it
moving the chains?
Just moving, which you did a great job of, right, in the preseason.
Have those 10-play drives. Keep the defense off the field. That's big, too.
Oh, Vito, that's a radio foul right there. All the goodwill he's built up, Tony, over the last hour, right out the window right there. That's his alert from Adam Schefter. Adam Schefter is just making sure he has the right information before he posts his next breaking news update. All right, Vito, overall, we know, it depends on Blake, but what's your gut? Give me the range, kind of what you're thinking for wins for this team for the entire 2015 season.
I'm kind of saying around seven.
Seven? Okay.
Maybe they steal one of those six that are tough, and then
let a couple get away that maybe they shouldn't. But ultimately,
but maybe win six of the other 10 or so.
And if you win seven, and look, we'd like to win 10, but let's say you win seven, and out of those other 9, you feel like you got a puncher's chance in 5 or 6 out of those too.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big overall step forward, because not only have they in the last couple of years not won a lot of games, there are some Sunday afternoons where they just frankly haven't been competitive, right?
That's right. Yeah. You want to stay competitive. That's the first step.
I think the difference is this year you feel like, and we've talked a lot about this, if you get down 10 or 14 points, you don't feel like the game's over necessarily.
Yeah.
Right?
There's some hope. With Bortles, he can bring you back.
All right. Vito, any final words of wisdom, parting thoughts? And we appreciate you coming in today. What are you leaving us with today? Anything?
At least we're looking for a fun season.
All right.
The last 2 years, you went in thinking, well, it's going to be tough. At least this year they have a shot.
There's hope.
Yeah, there's hope this year.
Even Vito Stellino, hard-bitten journalist, Tony. Vito Stellino, who will not crack a smile. He will call it like he sees it. He thinks there's hope in Jacksonville this year. Vito, I kid, you know that. We appreciate you coming in and appreciate the work that you do. I know Jag fans do as well. And it was fun, man. Hopefully you had a good time, and we'll look forward to doing it again, okay?
Enjoyed it. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I'll do it again.
Let's do it. Vito Stellino, folks, ladies and gentlemen, we'll take a quick timeout. Johnny O, he's got big shoes to fill, Tony. I don't know how he's going to be able to pull this off. Coming in on the other side, we'll welcome in John Osier, the senior writer for Jaguars.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It was a long off season, but the NFL is back.
I want winners.
We will be perfect in every aspect of the game.
Kickoff week on 1010XL is brought to you by Bullard Fence and Mike Merritt Heating and Air. It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
You know what that sound is right now, Tony, across Jaguar fandom?
What is
oh, oh no.
Damn, where'd Vito go? Oh no.
Exactly. This is like following us down.
It is, man. Welcome back, Johnny O. How are you? Sorry we missed you. I come in Tuesday, he goes, guess you're taking the day off Monday, huh?
Well, it's Labor Day for some of us.
It is for some of us. That's right. How you doing? Everything good?
Good. Good game week, right?
It is game week. .com Live's coming up in less than 30 minutes. Am I correct?
Yeah. You know, we can talk about all this, and it's great, but I'm very distracted having to follow Vito. I mean, it's going to be rough.
You're in his actual seat.
I can tell.
Right there. And he is a Hall of Famer.
He's a Hall of Famer.
Okay. Are you in any halls of fame?
Shame.
Hall of Shame.
Yeah.
The Shame Hall of fame.
Yeah.
Excellent.
No, I'm not.
I don't think I am in any either.
No.
Not even in my own mind.
I'm not even sure I'm headed there. I mean,
but you are
I don't see a scenario.
Jacksonville radio legend.
Oh, I'm at. Clearly, I'm at. In Australia, they know me as that. But otherwise, not so much. Johnny, is game week, man. We put everything behind us. And considering what the Jags hope to put on the field for week one, mm-hmm. they won't have everything that they hope to have. Obviously, they won't have Dante Fowler Jr. at any point this year. They won't have Julius Thomas this week. They likely not going to have Sindarik Marks, Marquise Lee this week from my vantage point.
Won't have Sindarik. Marquise.
I'm going to say likely.
Yeah, I mean, I can't see him playing. I think they'd like to. I thought when David Caldwell talked on Saturday about him being 50-50, But if he doesn't play against Carolina, it would be as a precautionary to make sure he was full speed against Miami. That had the feel of what's going to happen. I'm not saying Dave was saying that was going to happen, but that makes sense. You want him going. You want him going 100%. And, you know, they've run the offense now for 4 or 5 weeks without him. I think they feel comfortable with what they can do without him, although when you look at this offense, you realize why Marquise Lee is so valuable and why they want him on the field, because they need his speed, and that's the one thing right now that it lacks.
Do they find a way? Jeff Logman thinks they maybe find a way to use Corey Grant on offense because he does have that speed.
I think so,
speed.
Too.
I heard him talking about that yesterday.
You listen.
Well,
you should.
You're walking around the hall to, hey, you hear Logman?
Jeff
hear
Day.
Logman?
It's so, Jeff
yeah.
Day.
So it's hard to miss, but I think that has a lot of merit, and I think that's why Denard Robinson and Corey Grant are so important. I'd be surprised if they don't find some creative ways to get those guys the ball. I'm thinking about the screen they ran to Denard. I think it was out here against the Lions. The offense needs speed. Without Marquise, it's not there as much as you'd like at the receiver position. Well, the two guys who don't lack speed are Denard and Corey. So I would think you figure out ways to get them involved. Because they're the two guys who, if you're at your own 10-yard line, can score.
The Bernard Pierce probably a game day inactive then, right? You would think.
I think he plays special teams.
Do you? So you think all five guys will be up then?
It sure sounded when Dave Caldwell talked again on Saturday, when he talked after the roster cuts. You know, he's pretty transparent. And except for leading into the draft, where a GM can't be transparent, when he says something, it's usually, you know, there's not much reason to hide. Pierce is a really good special teams player. They want to be better on special teams, and it sounds like they'll figure out a way to have those five guys active. I don't see Bernard Pierce necessarily as a guy that they're thinking is going to be in the rotation heavily on offense, but it sure sounds like he'll be active on special teams.
We asked Vito Stellino this. I'll ask you as well. I big-time guy.
Yeah.
50 years in the league, Hall of Famer, Vito Stellino. That's how I'm going to introduce him.
Friday,
by the way,
if I've got 21.
By the way, I got this a couple of tweets. This one from Travis Fisher. He said, awesome show with Vito Stellino today. Need to have him on every week. I don't know if I've ever got one of those about John Osier, Tony, to be frank with you. And that was seconded by Irish Jaguar.
I have a subtle, quiet following.
Do you have alternate names that you log in under? Maybe they should tweet me. Tell
Ted
me how well you did today.
Look for Ted from the South Side here real quick.
Ted, we will do that. But the question being about T.J. Yeldon. He tops the depth chart mm-hmm. at the running back position. We understand that they drafted him for that reason, but very little work in the preseason. Do you think that's the right move to I'm not saying they handed it to him because he's out there at practice every day. They see what they think they have in T.J. Yeldon. Is that the right move for him to, when the starters walk on the field, for him to be the guy in the backfield right now?
I guess I'm less concerned about that position and who starts than I would be just about every other position on the field, because I don't think it's going to be a case where the starter is going, you know, 75 plays. I think they're going to have a heavy rotation of Denard and then Toby. And it's one that if it's not working early, you can switch out of very quickly. You don't change the game plan very much because of it. Yeah, I think he should be the starter because that's the guy they want in the offense. They see him as the bell cow back. They see him as the guy who at some point is going to fit that role of what they see as a running back, receiver, pass blocking, all the things you want. He showed he can do those things in practice. He showed he can do them in the preseason. I think they like that idea. And I think their vision for Denard is that he is going to be more of this offensive weapon that they thought of in the first year. And I'm not saying he's going to line up at five different spots, but I think they have ways they're going to utilize him, and it's not just going to be a one-back-on-the-field offense.
Offensive line, you know, really didn't give him a whole lot of holes in week three of the preseason in the running game, but I think when you look at it, everything that I've heard everyone raves about how Parnell has looked, both to the eye test and the film test, we all are very confident in Brandon Linder. I think Wisniewski is a powerful element there. I think that's where you want to run behind.
Sure.
And I feel very good about that group right now.
Yeah.
So, without game planning in the preseason, I don't know if we know how good they're going to be. Do you expect them to have some success moving people around in the run game?
Well, I know when I was doing my work for Jaguars.com this week, there's some things you do as far as preview, and I sort of realized that I hadn't written about the running game in like 2 or 3 weeks. And we've been talking about Bortles, we've been talking about the passing game, and what optimism over the way they're pass blocking, over the time Bortles getting. But don't forget, all off season and early in training camp, Gus Bradley was clear. He wants to run the ball. And the no interceptions in the preseason, that's a key stat. This team wants to be able to control the ball. I think it's going to have to with the defense. So they're certainly going to want to run. And I think we saw, not in the third preseason game, but in the first two preseason games, when the starters were in, we saw glimpses of them being able to run the way they needed to run. They didn't run for 150 yards, but they were getting to second and six. They were getting to third and two.
Yeah.
And they were setting themselves up to be able to pass out of good passing downs. That's what you want. So I saw enough of that in the first two games to make me think that can be there on Sunday.
And they moved the ball pretty effectively last year with Blake Bortles. And I mean, it was between the 20s. They were pretty good last year. You want to see them figure out how to finish drives off.
We got a Julius Thomas question coming,
right?
Don't we?
And no.
Is he ready?
I was listening to the drill on the way in this morning, and they talked about it feels like in this city, there's more of an expectation that they can win this game than there has been on an opening day in a while. And I think you talk about, we haven't talked about the running game in a couple weeks, and I think the reason we haven't talked about the running game is the same reason that I think a lot of people feel like they can win this game against Carolina and almost expect them to win this game against Carolina, and they haven't had that feeling in a while, and it's because of how well Blake Bortles has played in the preseason. And in the end, you know, you kind of ignore that they may not have any pass rush on Sunday against Carolina. You ignore that the running game hasn't been great in the preseason. It's been okay. That it doesn't appear that two of their more dynamic playmakers are going to be available to him in the passing game.
Right.
Blake Bortles being as good as he has makes you ignore a lot of those factors. And the big question is, does that transition to Sunday when the real bullets start flying?
Yeah. And to me, that's the central thing that you can't ignore. Every time you talk about this team, this game, that's the million-dollar question. And it's an obvious question, and nobody has the answer, but he looked really, really good and really, really improved. And does that translate to the regular season? When teams start game planning, does he see it as well once it's more complex that he saw in the preseason? Last year he didn't. Last year his mechanics didn't hold up during the regular season. So that's a legitimate question for people to have. All we can go on is, to me so far, everything he did during the preseason and even during practice outside of games looks so much more stable, looks so much more reliable. He looks so much more in control. I don't think he's going to, during the season, play at a level that he did in that third preseason game for 16 games. I don't think that's realistic. But do I think he's going to be improved from the place he was last year and be somewhere in between that performance we saw in week three of preseason and last year? Yeah, I think he's going to be somewhere in between there, which automatically makes them a better offense, makes them more competitive. And the big sort of tangent factor there is the offensive line. The offensive line looked like it was legitimately better.
Yeah, and which I think his presence and his feel in the pocket helps that as well, obviously.
Right.
You know, getting rid of the football and knowing when to step up. He has a pretty good sense for avoiding pressure and doesn't take off too soon, but when it's time to go, he's out of there.
It helps that he looked in preseason. You didn't see him not trusting what was going on up front. Now, there wasn't a whole lot of pressure, so he didn't have a reason not to trust it. But if he can trust what's going on in front of him, then I don't think there's any way in the world that he's not, you know, steps better than he was last year. Again, I don't know that we're going to see 20 for 29 for 245 yards and not 2.5 quarters. That's a really lofty thing to try to reach every week. And he's going to throw interceptions. But the performance of the offense last year, it's just hard to imagine it not being better and not being more reliable this year.
And the other big question, obviously, on the defensive side is going to be that pass rush and where it's going to come from for this team until they, you know, get some of these pieces back, until Sendarek Marks is back in the lineup and healthy and Andre Branch, these types of guys. It's a bit of a shame because there's an opportunity this week going up against a guy like Michael Oher, and I just don't know that they have anybody that's talented enough to take advantage of that matchup for this team. What would you do if it was you making the call? Is it Chris Smith on first and second down? Is it Ryan Davis on first and second down? How much
Smith
is Clemens
on first
in?
First and second because they feel like he's the guy who can play the run there a little better. I don't think they want to burn Clemens out on early down situations. Chris Clemens is the Leo pass rusher. He's the top Leo pass rusher on this team for third downs. He's the guy they want on the field there. I think the way they're going to create pressure is they're going to have to blitz. They're going to have to be creative. And you saw last year, this team didn't have a great elite pass rusher last year. Sendarek Marks got pressure in the middle, but you really don't have your three technique tackle usually as your elite go-to pass rusher.
He's a disruptor.
On a 45-sack team.
Right.
But they figured out ways to scheme and to game plan it a little bit and get pressure somehow through coaching, through just effort, through professionalism, whatever it was. I think you'll see an element of that. I don't think there'll be a 45-sack number five in the league sack team this year, but I don't think it's going to be a situation like it was in preseason where the opposing first-team quarterback was standing with all day to throw.
All right, I got this one in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Tell John that my fantasy football league is named the John Osier Fan Club. There you go.
Wow, very... Well, small, unsuccessful team.
Right. It's like a three-man league, I think, is what that is. Everybody has it's an amazing lineup. It's fantastic.
It's not one you want for your career. You want to have that be like a one-and-done league.
Yeah, they love you, Ozone. All right, so in addition to .com Live, we're going to have you back on Friday, and we'll talk maybe some season predictions then.
Absolutely.
And obviously your game predictions for Jags and Carolina. What are we going to be reading about over the next couple of days on Jaguars.com?
Prepping for the game, or you know, on Friday, 10 things Jaguars need to do. Excited right now, 11:45 Jaguars.com live with Paul Posluszny. Paul Posluszny live on the website. So that'll be good. It's always good to visit with Paul. He has a great perspective on where this franchise is.
All right, there you go, John Osier. He filled the seat pretty well. You know, you know Vito Stellino, Tony, but he did okay for himself around here, the senior writer from Jaguars.com.
Am I following the Stones?
At John Osier. That's right. The Stones, the Beatles. He's a Beatles guy, by the way, Vito is. So.
I am too.
There you go. Well, you guys,
me and Vito, we kind of walk.
You guys can compare top 10 lists.
We walk in lockstep.
We'll see you, Johnny.
All right, guys.
Buddy.
Thank you.
He'll be back with us on Friday. Coming up in a moment, Dr. Stephen Lucy from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, as we'll take a look at the latest injury report as the Jags get ready to take on the Carolina Panthers. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL, 92.5F.
Catch the J-Tech drive of the game on 1010XL.
Well, it gets down to big plays.
Third down at 6. Let's go!
Don't do it! J-Tech, driving futures forward.
Listen to that play!
1010XL, 92.5 FM. Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
All right, let's welcome in here on Jaguars Today, along with Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony, Dr. Stephen Lucy, one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers for your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Doc, how are you?
I'm doing good. Good to be back. Football's ready.
Always Natalie attired. You are like the tie you got on there today. Very sharp. When you're back with us, we know football season must be here once again. And we're just talking about with John Osier a few minutes ago. Not quite the vision the Jags had. They had hoped to have Dante Fowler Jr. and Julius Thomas and Marquise Lee and all these guys out there. Obviously, guys in varying states of rehab from their own respective injuries. But wanted to give you an opportunity to maybe set the record straight because, you know, I talked to Dave Caldwell and he gave me a sense of the decision to delay the surgery on Julius Thomas. The way he said was they were felt at the time that it was kind of 90% that if he went through it the way they did it, that he would be able to avoid surgery. Tell us why the Jags approached it the way they did, because people are saying, hey, why didn't Julius Thomas just have surgery immediately and he'd be ready a lot sooner?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of that talk too. And this is one, we don't like to get into specifics, but I've reviewed this and this case was handled entirely appropriately. He had a fracture, which I don't think anyone would have wanted to operate on. If it had been in your hands, you probably wouldn't have let somebody operate on it. But when you and I get hurt, we get followed by x-rays and every couple of weeks. When an NFL star gets hurt, he gets followed with MRIs and CT scans. And when you order these sophisticated tests, sure enough, sometimes you find stuff that you may not normally find. And it turned up a few weeks later that he had an instability in his finger, and he was having a little bit of problem with it. This was not anything anybody could have foreseen. But once you know that, then you have to deal with it. So he got an opinion from our hand surgeon, and he went off and got an opinion in St. Louis. And the opinions weren't like the Jaguars doctor said, don't do anything. And the opinions were essentially the same. He just opted to have the surgery in St. Louis. And this surgery was exactly the same that would have been done here. And hopefully he's going to have a speedy recovery. But when you follow these things closely, you'll find these small little subtleties that in a normal person you wouldn't find. And you know, there's an element of it, just tape it up and go, you know.
And nice, Doc.
and I can remember sitting on the receiving end of Tom Coughlin, Doc, it's only a blanking finger. What are you trying to make out of this? And so that mentality, which I call the gladiator mentality, a lot of that's is gone because the old gladiators have told the new gladiators that by the time I'm 30, I'm crippled. You better take care of your body. And that's what they're doing. And that's sort of what we're seeing.
The kind of procedure he had done, once it's fully healed and he's back in the field, any reason to believe there are any other issues that will present themselves? Or is that, you know, I'm not trying to ask you to give me a medical certainty. I'm just, realistically, should he be out of the woods once he's back and cleared to play?
I think absolutely he should. He should do fine.
Now, in the case of Marquise Lee, we've talked about hamstrings, and I'm not talking about him specifically necessarily, but in general, when someone injures their hamstring, pulls the hamstring, tears the hamstring to whatever degree, and I'm going to sound smarter than I had any right to be because you just told me that scar tissue will remain even after it heals inside that hamstring. So you may be more susceptible. Even if you allow it to heal as fully as it possibly can, you still may be more susceptible to further hamstring injuries.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's actually you're pulling the red meat apart when you have a bad pull of this muscle, and then it heals with scar tissue. And so that's not quite as elastic. And it's always a challenge for these players when their hamstring, they're not sure whether they're about to pull it again or it's just tightening up. And sometimes cold weather can affect it. So they have to be a little careful with it. But, you know, somebody like Marquise Lee, I mean, we're talking about a Ferrari. And so his return, what he's good for, and I heard you talking about this earlier with John, is speed. So if Marquise is three-quarter speed, is it worth putting him out there for? You want him 100% 40-40 as he always did to get the separation. And so they're going to hold him out till he can do that.
Final thought for you here as we'll welcome you back every week and hopefully look at a very limited injury landscape for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Plantar fasciitis ends the season for Ziggy Hood. Just as much as you can dumb it down for a guy like me, explain what plantar fasciitis is and why it can be something that can all of a sudden knock you out for an entire season.
Well, it's really common. It's one of the more common foot things people go to the doctors for, and it's a pain at the sole of your heel, and it's where your arch attached. And every time you take a step or run or jump, it's trying to pull it loose, and you sort of like tennis elbow and a lot of things, get some microscopic tears on that attachment, and it can be really painful, and you try to support it with arch supports, and you try to rest it. But it can linger, and it can go on to where it can be quite disabling. And so, you know, you normally don't see guys put on IR for plantar fasciitis, but this may have progressed to the stage that he just couldn't go, and he may have to have some procedure for it.
Well, we hope a full recovery for Ziggy Hood, but it looks like he won't be helping the Jags this year. Hopefully that won't be the case for Marquise Lee and Julius Thomas. We'll get them back in short order. We'll have Dr. Stephen Lucien here with us every Wednesday. He's one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers for your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville Bill's Orthopedic Institute. Dr. Lucy, good to see you. We had the frickin' finger today. We had red meat pulling apart, Tony. Dr. Lucy is ready for football season. Good to see you, buddy.
We're ready. Thank you.
There he goes. Dr. Stephen Lucy with Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute here in the JOI studios, by the way. All right, Tony. Fan Feedback Spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships every day. But on this Wednesday, we asked you, who other than Blake Bortles would you expect to be the offensive MVP of the Jacksonville Jaguars?
From Irish Jag, we got Jeremy Parnell. From Colby, Yeldon thinks he's going to have a monster season. From Brandon Lee, has been building his strength. The albino tiger is ready to pounce. Bonus, the albino rhino will ball hard. I assume that's Toby Gerhart. From Daniel, Allen Robinson will solidify himself as a legitimate number one target. From Stoff, Tyson Alualu will be the first man in NFL history to lead block for 4 1,000-yard
backs. I love
backs.
That one. That's a good one.
From Andy, it's got to be A-Rob. The chemistry carries over from last year. From Eric, been touting AR-15 for a long time now. Think he's going to finally break our streak of 1,000-yard wide receivers. From Chris, I'm going to say Julius Thomas, but think that Rashad Green has a chance. Good slot, hidden gem. From Foxtrot, we got the entire offensive line. From Cristiano, with the running back by committee approach, it's got to be a wide receiver. He's going to pick Allen Robinson. And from Demetrius, TJ Yeldon, in my opinion, he's next to take the mantle. From Maurice Jones-Drew, not saying it's going to be easy, but at least Demetrius, he's a believer.
All right, a couple on Facebook here. Alan Lynn went with Jeremy Parnell. Kyle Cochran said TJ Yeldon will bring much needed and much missed running game back to Jacksonville. Damon Austin, offensive MVP. Besides Bortles, the O-line will be my first choice. Rashad Green popping out of nowhere to become a stud receiver. Kevin Tappy went with Allen Robinson. A lot of votes for Robinson. Michael Batten went with Allen Hurns. Eric Mooshner went with A-Rob as well. Let's see who else we got in here. Any different? Toby frickin' Gerhart, says George Weirich. Mark my words, you heard it first. Do people call him the albino rhino? Is that something that is so
I don't know.
Funny? Or is that,
I don't know.
I always thought, was it Chris Dorham, the vanilla gorilla?
That's great.
May have been the best Caucasian-themed nickname of anyone in the National
vanilla
Football League.
Vanilla gorilla is so good.
The vanilla gorilla, the albino rhino. So, who knows? I'll have a whole zoo full of exotic creatures if they get the ball done. We don't have to see them until Sunday afternoons, Tony.
No. You know, we talked about it yesterday when Loggeman was in, you know, asking about the defensive MVP, too. And, you know, there's a couple names that get thrown out a lot when you put out these kinds of questions. You know, Telvin Smith, Aaron Colvin was a guy that was talked about a lot yesterday. And I said that the guy that I want to see be the MVP was Cyprian, right? Because of the big plays that I would like to see him make going into year three. On offense, you know, thinking about that, the guy that I think will be is probably Allen Robinson, because I do think there's a connection between he and Blake Bortles, and just because he's healthy to start the season, hopefully you get 16 games out of him, and I do think he can be a guy that's going to be right around that 1,000-yard mark, catch 6 to 8 touchdowns, somewhere in there, for this Jaguars team. But I think if this team is going to get where it needs to go, you almost think it needs to be TJ Yeldon. Right? I mean, just because there was nothing in the running game for this team last year. They invest a second-round pick in that guy. You haven't seen much of him in the preseason, but if the offense is going to get on the rails the way that you want to see it get on the rails, it means that they're going to have to rely on the running game, too. And that, to me, means TJ Yeldon more than anybody else.
Tomorrow, we'll make some season predictions, not only for the Jags. We'll go around kind of division by division, playoff teams, whole nine yards. As the season kicks off tomorrow night with the Patriots hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers. A lot of fantasy intrigue in that one, despite the suspension of Le'Veon Bell and Garrett Blunt.
Yeah, I mentioned this last night on my show, but it's every year you get that first weekend of college football, and it's sweet, right? You got football, the outcome matters in that first weekend of college football finally, as opposed to 4 weeks of preseason. But you get to watch all these kind of schlub teams go up against good teams over the course of a weekend, and you get used to the speed of college football, and then the NFL kicks off, and you're like, oh yeah, this game can be played at 1,000 miles an hour
right.
by
is the
everybody.
Level that we want to see.
It's crazy how fast the NFL game is. Can't wait for that thing to kick off tomorrow.
Oh my goodness. And we had our second Jaguars Today fantasy draft last night. Went very well. I'd say that everybody looked like they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
Knocked it out in about an hour and 40 minutes. A little slower than the first one, but still very good job. 16 rounds in under 2 hours. I'll take that. Anytime. So good luck to everybody. You know, we play each other in week one in the one we drafted last night.
Really?
I noticed that last night.
Tyler
Devitt went against Jeff Loggeman's recommendation, took Arian Foster last night in the middle of round four. And our buddy Josh Carney said he would have taken him with the next pick anyway. So there you go, Tyler. I'd take Carney's advice over Loggeman's when it comes to fantasy any day. But I would take Tony's advice and my own, and you can get that advice tomorrow with the FanDuel Fantasy Forecast, formerly the web.com fantasy forecast from 2 to 3 on Thursdays. We'll take all your fantasy lineup questions. We'll talk DFS, in other words, daily fantasy sports. We'll talk FanDuel, how to exploit that, some players to avoid, some players to capitalize on based on their pricing structure. We'll take your tweets. You can send your questions to us all throughout the week, and send those in as well for the TV show on CW17, the Your Jacks Fantasy Football Show. Airs now on Saturday nights with Tony and myself at 11 p.m., but primarily the idea is it runs Sunday morning at 11:30. So it's almost like they replay it Saturday night, but it's the first time it's on. You know what I mean? It's a bonus airing. So whatever time you can catch it, try to check that out. Tony obviously watched the last one because he stole John Brown from me again last night.
Don't steal.
You thief of John Brown. I can't believe
like
you.
You're the only one that could have that idea.
Yes, I am the only one that could have that idea, John Brown. But I love John Brown out in Arizona.
I do too.
This year. Although, even though I didn't need him at that point, I was going to take Bradford last night because you weren't going to get him twice. All right. This wasn't going to happen. And I already had Matt Ryan on the roster. I said, the hell with it. I'm taking Sam Bradford. Keep him out of Tony's clutches. But we'll do that tomorrow. Don't forget, the FanDuel League is up and running. Again, when I say the biggest payout, hey, look, join Hackers League, join Process League, but join our league as well, okay? Those guys have a smaller pool of teams, so they have a smaller payout. We've got $1,150 guaranteed, and a $5 entry gives you a crack at some of that money. First 40 places pay out. First prize, $200. Go head-to-head. Go to FanDuel.com/Mike, and that's all you need to do. Go. I've already got two lineups in, Tony. It's capped at three per person. I guarantee you I'll have three when it's all said and done because I want that $200. That's my money, baby. You want it? You come get it, all right? FanDuel.com/Mike, and we'll see you there.